Podcast meeting brilliant minds and looking at the world around them. How do they 360 themselves and 360 the world? Jamie Neal, the host, asks many questions about their mindset and how they fundamentally operate their world and the world around them. Hello, welcome back to 360 Yourself with me, the host, Jamie Neal. I want to wish you a good morning, a good afternoon, good evening, again, wherever you are in the world, because again, every time I do these episodes, our audience is getting bigger and I'm finding out new people who are listening from in the most incredible places. I just think it's incredible that we can listen to audio and connect with people from places that you potentially never heard of or places that you've never been before. I think that's incredible. I mean, technology's made massive leaps from the last 10, 15 years. It's absolutely incredible. And obviously new technology is always evolving, adapting. I don't know if you've heard this new app called Clubhouse, which I think came around maybe September, October last year, and I've just got onto it. And again, it's an amazing tool. It's kind of like an audio LinkedIn, where you have these amazing people like Gary Vee, or these brilliant entrepreneurial people who create these groups and they label them or name them a certain thing. So it could be like brand marketing or how to become more insightful or mindfulness and stuff. And basically you just go on a group, you can follow people and there's moderators, and basically you just talk. You just talk about stuff. You can mute people and then basically everyone's having like a little conversation, kind of like, again, like Zoom, but without video, just audio. And you basically just log into a group and log in and log out. And there's so many different conversations that you can have. And I mean, you connect these people who you've never probably would ever speak to before. And they're like seven figure, like entrepreneurial people or like gurus or like head of music labels. It's amazing, kind of a networking, insightful tool to be able to learn a lot more. And you can obviously set your own groups up and stuff. And I find this absolutely amazing. And you always go into the kind of thought process of what is next? What's the next thing? Because back in the day, people thought Instagram wasn't going to work. They were like, oh, what's Instagram? You just take pictures. And also Twitter with 240 characters, and now it's only 180 characters. I mean, that's mental, isn't it? And now Twitter and Instagram is one of the biggest apps going. And then Clubhouse will probably be the next thing. And I'm thinking to myself, what is the next thing that's going to happen after that? I mean, Clubhouse will be around for another like 6 to a year, and then there'll be another big thing, and there'll be another big thing, and it'll keep on going. And you're like, well, how do we keep up with this content? I mean, TikTok, I don't even have time for TikTok. There's too much content buzzing around in my space. I'm like, I don't know where to look. I don't know where to go. So that's kind of food for thought. Also, another kind of little flag as well. I've been obviously in lockdown in the UK because we've got COVID. And so the money that I probably would be spending on going out for dinners and drinks and stuff, I put that money into kind of like toiletries and facials. And I want to kind of flag up a product which I absolutely love. And it's called Drunk Elephant. And I use it twice a day, sometimes three times a day, for all kind of oils and moisturizers and stuff for your skin, because obviously your skin's getting built up with bacteria being inside all day. And obviously if you're not spending the money going out for that, maybe you should spend it on your self-care, sort of your kind of bath salts and oils and your hair mask and stuff. But I really, really strongly recommend this product. I think it's Drunk Elephant. It's amazing. There's so many different kind of aspects of it as well. You can kind of get the oily skin, you can get the kind of dry skin and stuff, and it's just amazing. So do check it out. So moving on, Again, another amazing guest who I've also worked with as well on her recent single called MG. And I'm really, really excited to chat with her. And I just think that she's just incredible. I mean, she won the BBC Music Introduction Award in 2016. She's played at Glastonbury. She's worked with Coldplay. I mean, she even in October 2013, she supported Sam Smith on Hugh's UK tour. I mean, these are incredible goals. And I'm excited. Like, I can't wait to talk to her and see how her mind works and see what she's feeling at this moment in time as well. Because she's obviously been reflecting on her life, obviously very busy making music as well, like most artists. So I want to introduce you to Izzy Bazoo. Hey Izzy, how are you doing?
I'm good, how are you?
Very, very well, thank you. So whereabouts are you chatting with me this morning?
I'm in my bedroom right now, on my work desk.
For a second I thought you'd give me like, I'm in the Bahamas, just on sipping out of a coconut, I'm on a hammock, and I'm just doing, for a second.
That's what I should have done. I've seen so many artists doing that, and I'm like, but they got out just in time. And I was like, why didn't I do that?
I know, I find it so funny that I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday, and they were like, do you know Miami's just like totally normal? And I'm like, I've got a friend who's at MAC Cosmetics, and on their Instagram, they're going out partying, they're going to clubs, no one's wearing like a mask or anything. Then I've also got another friend in Texas in the US who says like, also, things are also very normal. Like, they're wearing masks and stuff, but, like, they can go out clubbing, they can go out to parties and stuff. But it's so odd that, like, the US is, like, mostly hit by the virus, but different states are doing different things. I find it so peculiar.
Yeah, I mean, it's so much more spread out, isn't it? I just feel like it's... I can't do the math. I don't know how many times bigger it is than the UK.
It's so big, but it's like us saying, going, you know what, we're gonna do proper lockdown and proper kind of restrictions in Devon, and then in Manchester it's gonna be totally normal. It's sort of like that.
That's so mad. I don't know what their numbers are. I don't know if they're like hidden or if they're, I have no idea.
It is quite large, but I just see everyone like traveling and in Dubai and stuff, and I'm like, oh,
Dubai was a hit this year, wasn't it?
Yeah, I could have escaped to Dubai and do some work, but no, I'm in sunny Devon. Well, actually, no, it's not sunny at the moment. It's just raining and just lots of fog.
Oh,
I know. Could you guys?
I was saying to my friends, I was like, guys, March is only a month away. Technically.
Well, because they believe that the lockdown is going to ease in March, don't they?
Yeah, they do believe that. I reckon it's going to be like, yeah, it'll be like a half-half thing where there'll probably still be like curfew or something like that. But I think the fact that things open up a little bit and we can at least sit outside and have a meal or whatever, that would feel so good.
It would be like what happened in like from July to, it was, yeah, July to like October, where you could kind of go out to restaurants and it was kind of like normal life, but you still kept your social distancing.
Yeah, I actually loved the summer so much. I actually think it was so good because we had just been through a hard time and then we were finally allowed to see everyone and the weather was great. I found the first lockdown way easier because it was hot outside, and then you were only allowed to go outside for exercise or whatever, but at least like the weather was great, so I was actually fine.
Yeah, I was staying at my parents' house in Devon, and for the 3 months it was gorgeous weather, and we have a lot of land, and so we would go out every single day. We'd have our yoga mats, we'd do our workout, all that sort of thing, Joe Wicks, and we'd have barbecues 5 times a week, literally. It was glorious. It was so easy because I think that first kind of lockdown, you didn't have any FOMO because you know nothing, like literally nothing was going on in the world. So it was such a lovely kind of time to not have anxiety, to not literally think. I mean, I did a couple of like pitches for things, but like pretty much nothing. I just literally just chilled out.
And it was so lovely. But now you kind of, some people kind of going back into it. Some people still working and stuff. But I think the first lockdown, literally nothing was happening. So you felt like going, oh, I can actually rest because no one else, no one's doing anything.
I know, the whole world stopped. I freaked out and just was like, I need to do work, blah, blah, blah. Because I was just like, oh, I don't know, because I'm always too afraid to get bored or whatever. I don't know. There was just so many, I remember the feeling like there was so many hours in the day. And now the hours go so fast, weirdly enough.
Mm. Did you find this, because we had a second lockdown, didn't we? Did we have a second lockdown? I'm confused. Is this the third lockdown or the second lockdown?
I think it's the third one.
So right. how did your second lockdown go?
Oh my God, I can't even remember anymore. In the whole year.
It's so confusing, which is what? I don't know. I've just lost track.
What months are you talking about? That might be easier to know.
I think because the first lockdown finished like May, didn't it? Was it May?
Yeah.
And then we had like a bit of like leeway. And then we had the second lockdown, which kind of towards the end of last year.
Oh, that. Yeah, didn't like it. Didn't like it. Yeah, it was just horrible for me. Because I was just like over it, and I'd had so much fun in the summer. I was like, and I forgot we were even in this situation. You know, I got used to having like my friends around all the time, and then suddenly I was like, wait, I haven't left the country, and I was freaking out. I mean, I'd gone to Paris for like a week or something, but I was like, I just haven't left Europe. Well, technically, we have, because we're not in Europe anyway. You know what I mean? Yeah, but I really wanted to go to Ethiopia and see my family, and like, I miss stuff like that. I just kind of wanted to be outside of Europe a bit and just sort of breathe different air. But but now it's fine. I mean, I managed to get away in Christmas, so I'm fine. I'm okay. I'm just trying to be grateful for everything, because I think, yeah, that's one thing it's taught me, because I felt like a lot of my life, like, you know how like you're younger and you have all these goals and then you reach them. And then once you reach them, you're like happy for a second, and then you kind of forget and you carry on and you always want more.
I'm curious, what was one of your goals? Because a lot of people talk about like when they hit fame and when they hit kind of like, oh, I've worked with the person that I've always wanted to work with. What was one of your goals that you're like, okay, now I've got it, what do I do next now?
Well, since I was younger, I was like, my life was always a bit like, I was just moving around a lot. And I was never in the same place at the same time with my family. And all I ever wanted was for my family to be together. And it was just, I don't know why, it was just hard. I think my dad just works abroad, and then my mum works abroad. So we were juggling between them. And they were such good parents, but that was just their life, you know? And so I just really wanted to have like a home for myself, because I felt like so chaotic inside. And the music industry is amazing and so exciting, but at the same time, it's so up and down in your emotions. Mm. So I felt like I wanted to have like a safe space. And then I finally got that in Brixton, and it's made me so much more calm. And I feel like, I don't know, I just feel like that chaos has like calmed down a little bit in my heart, which is really nice. And then I wanted to tour in America, and I got to do that. That was amazing. With Coldplay, and that was like one of my best experiences I've ever had. So yeah, when I look back at those experiences, I'm like, I didn't realize how lucky I was. I think I did, but when it's not there anymore, you're kind of like, oh my God, that was actually massive, and wow, what a lucky girl, like, wow. So yeah, there's so many things I'm grateful for, so many things.
But it's also like, it's funny how like the industry, the arts industry, is so up and down. So a lot of people find that they need other things to keep them kind of like grounded in their emotions, whether that is what you said about a kind of safe place, like a house or a partner or something. Because like the arts is so up and down. It takes a lot of your soul.
Yeah, it does. People love you and then don't love you anymore. I mean, not like that. That sounds so dry.
Like you're a flavor and then you're not the flavor. And then it's all very like, I mean, I imagine like with Netflix. I mean, if you're on the hottest Netflix series, and then a year later, you're not, there's another Netflix series is the hottest thing around. So
yeah, exactly. And it's, and it plays with your emotions. You got to realize that, like, what I realized is like, oh my God, this is like an exterior thing for me, you know? It's like, but because it's all about you and what you're saying, you feel like, I don't know, it's just emotional when people are like, when like the reaction is hot and cold. So, and I think that's a lot of the time why I'm sure other artists, all creative people can relate to this. Like, sometimes you want to change yourself a bit or adapt to how you think someone will like you better. And it's like, and that's a real, like I was going to say something rude. I don't want to say, you know what I was going to say? I was going to say a mind.
Yeah, but you should, but you shouldn't ultimately change yourself because to serve someone else for their like appreciation or whatever. You should just be yourself, and then if they don't like the version of you, then you just go up yours.
I know. I totally get that. But it took me a long time to get that, and it took me maybe up until like 2 months ago for me to get that. And I was on a journey to try like actually feel that instead of it just being like an affirmation. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so I imagine as an artist, you read and you watch like films and stuff, and then you have these big shot like record labels or managers going, yeah, we're going to do this with your hair, and we're going to change you up this and this and that and that, and they try to change your identity. So it must be so confusing sometimes from these outside people that you trust who are your team, and they might be saying, do this, do that, do that, and you're going, well, actually, I need to do, there's a part of me that I need to kind of give in to kind of the commercialized sort of image of yourself, because obviously, like, I assume like Sia is not that Sia all the time. There's like a different side of Sia, but she knows the two different people. So I imagine you've got to kind of balance it, go, okay, I need to kind of maybe commercialize myself in that way for a bit, but also keep rooted on who I am as a person.
Yeah, no, totally. I feel like I can't remember if, because it's just like one big blur, you know, when you do shoots and stuff and things are busy and you don't have time to even like overthink anything or think things through properly. I don't know, I can't remember if anyone told me to look a certain way or blah blah blah, but I think sometimes you just when you're part of a big label, you just come accustomed to people doing things for you, and it got to a point, which is really like kind of them, and you're so lucky to have that. But it comes to a point where sometimes it's interesting just to like, I was always told actually, if I didn't want to do something at some points, a certain person I work with would be like, why are you sweeping the rug under the whole thing? And I'm like, well, sometimes I think it's good to do that. And I don't know, maybe I'm naive, maybe I'm stupid, but sometimes I feel like you slip the rug, like you just pull the rug off under your feet and see where you land and see where you're really at, and then you build from there. And I felt like that's where I was at like 2 months ago, and it feels really good. I felt like I just broke myself up and put the pieces back together again in a new way. So yeah, sometimes it's good to do that. I don't know, because you get a lot of advice from people, and then it's like before you know it, you don't have your own opinion. It's just like, you know, sometimes you got to shake it up a bit. I don't know.
Because also ultimately you are the only person that knows your voice, because you are you, and you've had massive success as well to as you as an artist, you as a person. So something is going right, whatever you're doing.
I guess I don't know if I don't know. I feel like I never like sitting on like what I've done in the past, but then it's good to acknowledge it. I don't think I acknowledge it a lot.
I think anyone who's ambitious or successful, I mean, I think I've definitely wrestled with the kind of the ongoing, always looking forward but never looking backwards. And then you look at your kind of career and you go, oh, okay, I have done pretty well. And everyone, and then you always forget the people that are looking up at you go, oh, I wish I had that career. And then you're looking at someone else and you go, I wish I had that career. And there's always a kind of cycle. You never really look back because you're so ambitious about looking forward.
Yeah, I know, it's crazy. I think it's, that being said, I think it's important for us to tap ourselves on the back and just encourage yourself a bit. I think we encourage our friends so much, but I never give that sort of encouragement to myself, and I don't know about you.
I give great advice, but I'm not very good at taking it.
Yeah, me too. I'm like, damn, why don't I do?
I read so many self-help books.
Me too. I love them.
I do obviously this podcast. So I listen to a lot of great advice. I talk to some brilliant, unique minds. And some people come to me for advice and stuff, my friends, about situations or whatever. And then I can give really great, because I'm just regurgitating things that I've read, things that people told me. And then to put it to my own life, it's so difficult. I'm like, and I have to be so disciplined to go, you know what, you've given that advice to someone. I should really use that for my own life.
Yeah, I know, it's true. I totally get you. I guess half of it is like owning up to stuff, right?
Mm.
Because I found a lot, I was annoyed sometimes, just emotionally, like, why is it like that? Or, you know, and then often you just have to like point the finger at yourself and just be like, okay, I'm responsible for how, like, what energy gets drawn towards me, and like, and sometimes I would be like pointing the finger at someone else, and I was like, actually, it's me that can change this, and that's it. I can't rely on anyone else.
I have that experience with someone recently that they're not a very positive, they're very they look down at themselves all the time, and they're just bad energy, negative and stuff. And it's subconsciously like imprinting on me. And I'm such an optimistic sort of person. I think I'm like, if I put my mind to it, I could do anything. And that's my mindset, right?
Yeah.
This person isn't like that. And I've got to like make a decision going, how do I have to like push this relationship away? Because this is not very good for my own mental health and my own energy space, or do I keep it going and see how it goes, and hopefully this person will be affected by my good energy and suddenly they will have good energy at some point. And it's like, you don't want to be too mean, but you go, okay, what's the line where it starts affecting me?
Oh yeah, that's true. That's a tough one, because often when someone is like that or feels like that, they probably need you the most.
Yeah.
And I think that is like a tough one. And I'm like you as well, like I'm really optimistic, so if I've got to go see someone that I know is going to be like that, I'm like almost turned off from seeing them, which just sounds like such a terrible thing to say. But sometimes what I do is I just remember how I felt. Like, there's probably one point where we were all like that at a moment, and we probably had somebody. But usually, I feel like sometimes people just have to run. I mean, and it's okay. Sometimes you just have to sit there and listen, and then it just helps so much. And I don't know if the person you're talking about is like always been like that, or it's because of the situation, but I definitely do feel like people either are like becoming, I hate to say the word, like woke, and they're like meditating and doing their yoga, like self-care, or trying to like that. Or I feel like people are quite short-fused. It's very like one way or the other. Like, how can you be between?
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? Because I think everyone in this moment, we are in sort of like the same environments. And so it's so difficult to kind of get out of your headspace. How has it been for you writing? Because you said you have your studio in your same kind of house. How has that been to write in the same space that you also relax in?
I really love it. Ironically, I'm really aware that it can be. Although I do like having a routine, it can get a bit like monotonous.
Mm.
So what I do is I make sure I use every room in the house. So like I do my workout in the living room. I make sure I eat in the kitchen, and I'm not like stuffing my face in front of my laptop while I'm in between takes, which is what I used to do, which is not great. Make sure I'm out in the morning by like at least 9:30. I do exercise, which is, I cannot stress enough how much that has helped. I can't believe it. It's amazing. And I call my mum more. My brother, my friends, I read, I just try set activities up, almost like, you know, when you go to school and you have to do different things in the day.
Yeah.
And you never got bored and you were just really looking forward to go home.
Yeah.
So just stuff like that, and cooking, and I don't know, just, yeah. And I love writing so much. There's so much to say, because I think that for a long period of time, I pushed down a lot of my emotions because they were too painful to address. Mm. And I feel like now I'm on my own, I can let it out on the mic because I'm not embarrassed, because no one, well, apart from my neighbors, can really hear me. You know what I mean? Sometimes I'll be embarrassed to say stuff in front of a new producer, I don't know.
Yeah, it's. I mean, we, as artists though, it's about tapping in. I mean, look at Adele's albums. I mean, it's all about heartbreak, isn't it? It must be exhausting as well when you're writing, because obviously you're just tapping in constantly to emotions and the way that you perceive the world.
Yeah, I mean, I mix it up. Like, I do make a point out of making some really euphoric songs, just because it makes me happy and I want to make other people happy. And I feel like we need it. Like, we need to feel some joy, like, need to open our hearts and, like, you know, just really just love each other. I really feel like I want to feel that too. But then also, the sad songs I write aren't really necessarily, I mean, it is heartbreak, but it's not really about boys. So it's not like that generic thing that's like, I don't know, I can't explain it. I mean, my dad passed 3 years ago, so it was just like such a complicated feeling. I couldn't even explain it.
Mm. I mean, it is though, losing when someone passes away. I mean, it's never nice, whoever it is.
Yeah, it was just, yeah, it was so weird. And when this whole thing hit, the pandemic, it was just like a reminder. And I was like, okay, so I think I had a lot of things to say about that, but it was very hard to put it in words at some point, because, but I have been feeling quite spiritual, because I've just been thinking about him a lot. And when I write the euphoric songs, I think of him. And I know this sounds really weird and creepy, but sometimes my mic is facing like a picture of him and me, and I'm just singing to him, and it makes me feel like I'm with him, and it's like such an amazing feeling. So this whole journey has actually been quite, it's been quite spiritual, and I feel like, you know, he hasn't really like left my mind. So it's been quite comforting in a weird way.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, some people believe that obviously their spirits or energy never really leaves us. It's always sort of there. So it kind of makes sense to you to kind of sometimes fall to a picture of him, because essentially if you believe that sort of like the energy, because a lot of people don't know about like the fifth dimension stuff. I mean, we believe it might be a thing, but there's a theory that actually the fifth dimension is just like where our energies are, our kind of our, in quotation, our souls are. And our fifth dimension is something that we can't see. So essentially what probably could happen is that when you pass away, you don't actually go to this place called heaven. Potentially your energy is just stored in the fifth dimension and they're just walking around in a different dimension. So actually they are with us all the time.
Oh, that's crazy. Is that the thing where people were saying that there's like so many different versions of you or something like that?
The multi-universe. That's what. So multi-universe is slightly different. So I'm doing a project which I've been exploring a lot about multi-universes and dark matter. So I can put a bit of information on this. So the multi-universe. So you know we have like the space, time, universe, galaxies. So galaxies and universe are always creating. It's always kind of pushing out and is always forming, right? So it never ever ends because it's always moving and being created, right? So we have galaxies and universe. So we have like, there's multiple different galaxies, multiple different universes. And so when you potentially, when you go into a black hole, for instance, you go into another universe, right? So what they might believe, that obviously they have no way of proving this at the moment, but they might believe is that let's say there's four different universes, right, in the world. In those four different universes, through these black holes potentially, that each universe is an extension of you, but just slightly different. So essentially, if you pick up a cup on your right-hand side, in universe two, the same person might pick up with it with their left hand. And so you're slightly doing the same. You're doing the same thing, but slightly differently. So your paths are different.
Wow.
And that's the multi-universe.
That's so interesting. That's so cool. And is that proven?
I mean, they can't prove it, but that's what they believe. There's theories on it. I mean, I don't know how they can prove that there are multiple versions of you in different universes when they've not explored different universes. But these are all theories, though, like the fifth dimension. They don't even know what dark matter is. They know it exists, but they don't know what dark matter is.
Yeah. So, I read this thing. It was Stephen Hawking's book. And I read this line that just made me so sad, and I just didn't finish the book because I was like, oh no. And it said something like, it was like, human beings don't understand zero. Like, we don't understand when things are over. Not like over, but like, he was like, people want to believe that there's, I don't know, I don't want to quote this wrong. Yeah, but he was basically saying, once you're gone, you're gone. We just don't understand zero. He said, and he said there might be other theories there that have not yet been proven. So there is all the possibility. But he said something like that.
I think because humans always believe that there is something more than what meets the kind of eye, and I think that's because of the optimism of humankind. I think it's like there's all these theories, and you have people who are flat earthers, and you have people who believe that aliens helped Egyptians back in the time, and all these kind of theories, because there's always got to be something more. And even if we have aliens in contact at some point in the future, and everyone knows that there's aliens, religious people who are Christian will then turn around and be like, oh, that's the work of God, even though they believed that we all came from Adam and Eve. They'll be like, well, aliens was made by God. So there's always a sort of like, always that kind of profound kind of questioning going, there's always something more. And if there's something more, we're just going to rationalize it.
Yeah. I mean, when I was 7 years old, I believed in an afterlife.
But I mean, we just don't know, do we? Maybe in the future we will know more about like where we came from. Did we come from Adam and Eve? Did we come from the Big Bang? Did we come from particles and bacteria forming or whatever? Like, there's all these things that we will eventually find out, maybe not in our lifetime, but maybe in, like, 500 years or 50 years or something, maybe that, I don't know.
Well, I hope it's 50, so we find out.
I'd love to. Did you hear about, that famous comedian broadcaster? I can't remember what his name now. He passed away last week. I think it was Larry King. Yeah, Larry King, I think it is. And he is freezing himself in a cryo chamber just in case in the future they have the technology to be able to awaken him.
What? Are you serious?
Yeah.
What? Wow.
Yeah.
I'm speechless.
There's lots of people who do that though.
How are they going to wake him up though?
I don't know. I think you have to look into it. You have to look into it, but essentially they believe that potentially when they have the technology to be able to wake people up and what sort of thing, have that technology, or to, you know, because I think that they're testing at the moment to take the brain activity from a dead body, because it's not the brain that's dead. Sometimes it's just the body. So they take the brain, the neurons from the brain, and then implement it into a fresh body.
Fresh body, but how can they find that? They would have to hurt someone to do that. How? I don't understand.
So let's say that someone passes away very, very early on, right? 25, or the second they grow bodies, right? Let's say they grow a body.
Okay, yeah.
They either grow it, or someone unfortunately passes away when they're 25, right?
Yeah.
There's loads of films about this, and there's lots of research. So they would map the brain activity from one body and they put it into another body, like a younger body.
Wow, with the younger body's organs?
So the body's healthy, right? So the young body's healthy, right? It's totally fine. It just hasn't got an active brain, right? But what you do is you take the active brain in the old body and then put it into the new body. And then they just transfer it over. Kind of like just copying it into an external drive technical at that.
Wow, that's astonishing.
Isn't it? I think that's what they're freezing these very rich people. So hopefully in the future they can do that.
Should that be our new goal, Jamie?
That should be hopefully in 50 years' time, that will be possible for us.
Yeah, but you know, we got to save for that. So that's a big goal.
That is a big goal. I mean, I would love that. I mean, I want to live till I'm 120. I want to keep going. And
me too.
If someone said to me, Jamie, when you die, we can put your brain into a younger body and you can have another like 50, 80 years, I'd be like, absolutely, yes, please.
That sounds awesome. That sounds like the ideal situation.
Could you imagine? It's kind of like a second chance at life to learn things and to learn new things. Like if you had a second life, you've learned like so much of this 80 years of life living in this body. What would you do in the second body? Like, would you learn, like, would you be like, do like a master's in like Scientology, like science? Would you, I don't know, become a carpenter? Yeah. Would you become president? Like, what would you do with your second time? Because you've got all this experience from
what I would definitely want to be a psychologist. I would love to do that. I always wanted to study and I never did it. And it was like one of my biggest regrets. What would you do?
What would I do? What would I do? I would love to like be, I'd love to start study history. Like I'd love to be like a historian.
Oh, that is so cool.
Yeah, I was
like, really... And people that like travel the world and like look at old like artifacts and stuff like that. Like that kind of history.
Like an archaeologist. I can't even say that word.
We need to go back to school, Jamie. I'm joking.
I know, but I was so good at history back at school days when I was like 16. I was really, really fascinated by history and I still am fascinated by history. So it's fascinating how all your life experiences and all your skills and all your interests morph into one to produce your original voice or your voice. And I can look back and go, oh, I really love history and I love Egypt. I love looking at the Vikings. I love looking at where things have come. And so I think within my creative process, I'm always about the journey, about why things happen and why they happen for that reason and how they've happened from A to B. And it goes back to my history brain, looking at going, what was happening at the Spanish Armada? Like all this sort of thing, what was going on then?
That's so interesting. Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, it all links up. It all links up all together.
Yeah, it does.
I'd love to know. So to our audiences, we actually worked together on a music video, on Izzy's music video, which was called MG by Dom, Feat Dom McAllister. How do you come up with an idea when you're writing? Because obviously every writer has a different way of, I don't know, writing something, or they hear a tune like in the MG, is that do in the background? Like, do you hear like a sound at first and then you go, oh, I'm gonna put lyrics onto it, or do you come with lyrics first? How does it usually work?
Well, basically, the producer in the room was like playing the beat, and I sort of like, me and Dom were just making tea in the kitchen, and I just ran into the studio and I was like, oh, I love this, and I just started singing. I got my MG with Roof back. Like, I just started doing like the chorus. Mm-hmm. And me and Dom were just like dancing together in the studio. Like, we were like jumping up and down and just like, it was just an energy thing. It was kind of like a party. It was so funny. And I don't know, like, it was raining that day. We all initially didn't really want to be in the studio. Like, we just wanted to go out and have fun and do stuff. So then we wrote this song. About that, and it was just like a groove. It was just one of those groovy songs, and it was basically about, like, I think I was sort of wrapping up like all my little childhood memories into like the chorus, and that's really like how it came about. Really, I like making quite euphoric.
It is so groovy. It's such a like, it's so kind of in your body. You can't not groove to it, and. That's what I like with your music. It makes you feel great. It makes you feel you want to dance to it. And I think that's such an amazing quality to have.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad. I do like feeling good, and I like making other people feel good as well. Like, I was always that girl, like, in the club that was, like, hold my hand out and, like, try dance with, like, other girls and encourage people to get up and just, I don't know, just, I feel like I bounce off other people's energies so well. But also, we had a really interesting dance session or movement class where we had to mirror each other's movements, and I found that so powerful. And that was, that really, it really moved me, because you were like, okay, now it's your time to lead and I'll follow you. And I was really struggling to find, like, my own voice for a long time. And that was, like, the start of me finding my voice again, because you were like, it's up to you and nothing you do is right or wrong. And then I was just like, wow. And it was so empowering. It was such an amazing thing that you did there. Yeah, I really like loved that class. I was like, because I don't know, it's like, it just wasn't, it didn't seem like we were planning anything. It was just very spontaneous, and it was like a really cool feeling.
I'm glad you had fun. I mean, it was a very spiritual, well, a very holistic sort of session, because I came away so refreshed and rejuvenated. Like,
I was broken. My body was like cracking. Do you remember when we were rolling on the floor?
It was for me, because I think we put so much pressure on what's right and what's wrong and what's great and what's not great as artists. Yeah. And when you come up with ideas, I've always been taught and mentored by some brilliant people, and they just say, it's just an idea, just let's throw it in. Let's not give it like let's not judge it. Let's just see what it is and just keep going. And I think that's when you start creating, you start exploring. I think people then kind of get shy and like, oh, is it any good? Is it not good? And they kind of label it rather than just go, let's just see what happens and just go with our a natural kind of emotion. Let's feel it rather than kind of judge it. And I think that's the way that I like to approach everything, because that we don't ever judge it before we start even doing it. And so I'm so glad that exercise allowed you to kind of reevaluate kind of like the way that you, I don't know, make choices or whatever, because I think a lot of people struggle with choices, going, is this the right choice for me? Rather than going, this is an adventure, it could go that way, it could go that way, but it's not a right or wrong choice, it's a choice.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like, I don't know, especially like, because I love writing different styles of music, but at the end of the day, it's not going to be like that different, you know, from song to song. That sometimes I feel this pressure to like make sure everything is so cohesive and all that stuff, thinking that if it's not, that no one will perceive it well or something like that. But then you made me realize that we change day to day and we feel different all the time. Are you still there?
Yeah it's,
oh, sorry your picture went away, so I thought you know, when you're talking to yourself and you're like, wait a second.
Yeah. I totally understand, because it's like our balance, right? So one day I got told this is really fascinating. So like, what if you put your, if you stand on one of your legs one day, right, and you find your balance, right, and you're like, cool, got my balance. The next day, that same feeling, that same balance won't be there, because everything is moving inside you. You're also growing in like tiny bit by tiny bit each night, and we're also shrinking and we're also growing, so we're always moving, our body's always moving even when we're sleeping, right? So that feeling of like that balance won't ever be there the same time, because it's a different feeling, it's a different person, because you are a new you. So when someone says like, let's create something that was yesterday, well, yesterday was a different day, and today I'm feeling my body's different, my mind's different, everything is different because it was yesterday. And so you've got to refine that feeling again in a new way, because it's never going to be the same as yesterday, because you're different.
Yeah, no, I know.
in a weird way. But when someone told me this, I was really like, it just opened my mind up. I was like, oh, yeah, because it's like some people they have a cigarette and they have another one because they're chasing the dragon, as they call it. Like, you'll never get that feeling ever again, because it was gone. It's just been. So, but what you can do is find a new feeling, and that you can put that into anything, any sort of relationship with like partners, like loved ones, you try to recreate the same feeling again, but it would never be there because that's the past.
Yeah, that's so true. When I think of my relationship with my brother and how it's evolved, it's just so interesting. Like, I think of like how we were as kids and like how we are now. And it's just changed because, you know, he was always the boss of me because he was older than me. And I was like 7 and he was 11. And when you're that young, it's like, that's such a big age gap. And it's like, you know, if we're going shops together, whatever, like he had to look after me. Like, do you know what I mean? And then when we got, I remember when I was like 20 and just, you know, turning into a woman, like things were changing and it was kind of weird for him because he was kind of like, oh, I can't really tell her what to do anymore. And now I just feel like we're sort of like leveled up now. We're just like the same age and our relationship has developed. Now we talk about people we date and like, and stuff that we used to be so embarrassed about, like talking about before, and like just deeper stuff and our emotions. And I felt like, I don't know, it's just so weird how your relationships change for the best, and how we can like grow apart and grow closer all the time.
Yeah, and it's just about growing, isn't it? It's about changing and being open to change, because evidently we are changing every single day. That's what happens. And it's being open to it rather than kind of clinging on to what was, is to go and be open and to go look into the future and go, okay, how do I recreate this new feeling, this new experience, rather than try to read.
That's amazing how quickly we can recover, don't you think? It's so amazing to see how quickly we can recover.
For sure, like recover from heartbreak, recover from rejection. I mean, that there's that quote, isn't it? Like, tomorrow is a better day. And I honestly truly believe that. Like, I can feel a bit meh from something, or something has hurt me, and then the next day I have a sleep and I feel so much better, and it's like I'm a new person, because I'm a new person. So it's totally new me.
Yeah, no, for sure. I feel like, I don't know, like I used to be so scared of rejection, and now I'm just like trying to put myself out there more and just, I don't know, just be less shy about things. And I think you get a lot less rejection than you think, but then the more you get them, sometimes it's like, it's not that bad. It like hurts you for like 30 minutes, and then you're like, and then you forget because you're doing something else, and then you're like, and then it's just so irrelevant like a couple of days later.
Yeah, but rejection, again, it's about like, it's all these successful people and these business people say that like the edge of like the risk is where you grow the most. And so if you never kind of risk it, or you never kind of put yourself out there, you never fail, or you never get rejection. But those things are really important for growth. They're really, really important. And you get better at knowing how to deal with rejection, how to deal with failure. Like, it's just really important.
Yeah, no, for sure. I do. Yeah, no, I do think that.
I'm a quote master, because I have so many quotes in my brain. And there's one quote I love. It says, fail, 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 fail better. And I love that.
I like that one. Yeah.
I don't know who wrote it, but I find it so fascinating, because it is just that sort of thing. Like, I mean, everyone has failed at some point in something. It's just, you just get up, you do it again, you fail better, you get up, you do it again, you feel better again.
Yeah, no, it's true. I saw one on WeTransfer once. They actually have some really good quotes, I'm not gonna lie, and really cool artwork.
Yeah, I've got this app called Gratitude, I think it's called.
Yeah.
Gratitude, and it just gives me quotes every single day, and it gives me like ways of dealing with situations in life. It just pops up every single morning at 8 a.m. and it's so brilliant, and I love it.
Which one did you get this morning?
I can read it to you actually this morning. This morning it was, the most beautiful moments in life are moments when you are expressing your joy, not when you are seeking it.
Ah, I love that.
Yeah, every single morning.
I saw that last night actually. My housemate's mum came to pick her up to go to our house, and I don't know why, but her mum just made me laugh and I could just feel my heart open like a rose, and it was like, it was hurting me to laugh, and I haven't laughed that hard in so long, and it felt so good. It just made my whole evening. I don't know, and it was just like, And I wasn't even trying to have fun with her mum. It was just, it was so spontaneous. And I was like, oh, so it's just, yeah. And it's just little things like that, that just make your day, you know?
It is. It's the small things in life. So I end up, so as we come to a close, what I always do with my artists and my guests is we give back to our audience. I'd love to know something that's inspired you, whether it's been an album, book, a painting, a quote, a mantra that you've kind of loved and you've given back to people.
Oh my God. Okay, so there's one quote that I really liked that was, through the cracks, let the light shine, which I really like that. Because it was like through all the imperfections, just see like the bits of beauty that you've missed before. It makes you special. That's how I took it. And just embrace all your rough edges. I really liked that quote for that reason. And books, I don't know, like I read a book that was kind of messed up and I don't know if it's really giving back to people. I read a book called Surrounded by Psychopaths.
Through the what?
Surrounded by Psychopaths.
Right, okay.
And sorry, I don't want to close the show like this.
No, and I'm interested to know, yeah.
It's about, it's just about protecting yourself because apparently there's 1 in 50, that's the number. There's like 1 in 50 people are psychopaths, and they can be like minorly so, and it doesn't mean all of them act on it. The scale is very broad. So, but it's just all about protecting yourself and not falling for, the charms of people that can make you think or do things that you're going to do without your will because they've manipulated you to do that thing. And it's like, it's just highlighting like how it happens in everyday life, especially like in big corporations or in your family or in relationships or whatever, even friendships. It could be in any situation, and it's just sort of looking out for those behaviors and just avoiding those, like, and just basically defending yourself off those like energies and like behaviors that can make you do things you don't want to do, because like you said, each choice is like a step towards like how your life is going to be. And so, you know, you got to be careful that other people aren't making these choices for you for their own benefit. So it's just, yeah, so it's basically about that. And me being quite naive and open-hearted, and like by nature, I don't know, I was attracted to read this book, and I read it, and I think it's good. I think it's really, really good. And I think that you don't need to take it too literally and start pointing fingers of who you think is a psychopath or whatever, but I just think it's just good to have it at the back of your head, so you're just all
yeah more... just to be weary, and also just to know that, listen to your own voice, like, because you're gonna have loads of voices in your life about to tell you or suggest or to advise you to go this path or this path, but actually it's about your own voice and what you want to do and the path that you want to take. So I think that's kind of where you that's how I take it from that book.
Yeah exactly. It's a really good juicy read. Yeah, it's a good one.
I'm finishing off a book at the moment called Green Lights by Matthew McConaughey, which is absolutely amazing. So I highly recommend this book.
What's that one about?
So I put it very simply. So, you know, like when or everything is going right in your life, you just get the job, you get the partner, things just go right. And so he theories this as the green light. And then sometimes in your life, things don't go the way you want them to go, but it doesn't mean that it's not gonna go right at some point. It just means at that moment, you're in like kind of a red or an amber, right?
Yeah.
But sometimes when you get a no, which is a red light, it could potentially means a yes, but it doesn't mean a yes at this moment in time. So it could actually be that no could be an amber, but you need to be ready for when it goes green.
Ah, okay.
You know what I mean? So it just looks at his life and how many green lights and how he's kind of moved around his life with that kind of theory of the red, the orange and the green light.
That's so interesting. I want to read that. I'm going to read that.
Yeah, do you really? I mean, I think it came out just before Christmas, and I've just got a bunch of books because I love books, self-help books. And so this is my fourth book since Christmas that I've kind of got
check you out.
Yeah, I read like crazy. Like I just read like a book, maybe like 15 pages a day or something like that, 20 pages a day. Sometimes it's like 40. If I'm feeling like I've got time, well, I have got time, but I mean, if I've got like the time to sit down, because I'm also very dyslexic. So it, for me, I've had to learn how to read properly.
It must be such a joy for you to like, now you can do it like so fluently. It must be like so nice for you now you're good at it, because it took so long to like get to that point.
Yeah, because I hated books for a long, long time. I hated reading. Like, I still kind of don't like read. I hate reading out loud to people. Like, it just is one of my fears. I hate it. Just because of dyslexia, just don't like kind of speaking out. But I didn't read for a long, long, long time. And I think for dyslexic people, it's finding the right book for you to read. Yeah. And for me, it was self-help books. But if you give me something like Harry Potter, I wouldn't be interested in it. For me, I like to read so I can better myself and improve myself rather than immerse myself in a world. I don't know, yeah. It doesn't really work for me, that sort of kind of immersive, like Lord of the Rings and all that sort of thing. I want to read all biographies about people.
Yeah, if Lord of the Rings is 4 hours, God knows how long.
I mean, yeah, I think probably the book is like 400 pages or something like that, which is obviously not too much, but I personally couldn't, I wouldn't tackle that. But if the Dalai Lama had a book which was 400 pages, I probably would try and do that.
Well, it's something you can just like pick up and put down. I feel like with books like Harry Potter, you kind of just have to like read it all in one go. Not like in one day, but like you've got to just,
yeah, I think because obviously with like self-help books, it's just like there's like it's all kind of like bite-sized thoughts within each chapter.
Yeah.
Even though it's like there's an overriding kind of consensus and thought process within each, but there's like little bits of thing. So I think you can kind of like read like 2 pages or 3 pages, kind of get like 2 or 3 kind of points, and then shut the book and then come back to it, and then you go, okay. But I think when you've obviously with Harry Potter, because it's you're thinking about the world and you're kind of immersed in it, I think you have to spend longer than 2 or 3 pages to really get into a story.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of how I don't know, read. But yeah, I highly recommend Green Lights by Matthew McConaughey, because it is a very, very fascinating book.
I'm going to read that. It sounds really good.
Good. Well, I want to say thank you so much coming on 360 Yourself, because I've really enjoyed chatting with you and catching up as well, because it's been lovely to just to chat and I don't know, just because I've known you for like about a year and a bit now, I think.
I know. I kind of met you through this whole thing. It was really nice to get to know you.
It's crazy. So thank you again so much for coming on 360 Yourself, and I wish you all the best with all your projects that you've got going on.
Oh, thank you. You too.
This is 360 Yourself, and I'm Jamie Neal. Thank you very much for taking a moment to listen to our wonderful guests. Please subscribe to our podcast to access all our brilliant guest episodes. They are released every Sunday at 12 p.m. We are available on all listening platforms: Spotify, Pocket Casts, Overcast, Google Podcasts, and Castro. You can also find us on Instagram at 360_yourself, Twitter at yourself360, and our host at Jamie Neal JN. Thank you for listening.